Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy.
Hi. It's Ruby Wiles, producer of the Female Athlete Nutrition Podcast and assistant to Lindsay Cortez here. I'm just popping in to tell you a little more about this episode. As we approach another major podcast milestone, 200,000 downloads, woohoo! We know we have a lot of new listeners out there who may not have heard every episode. So even if you are an original listener and have heard every episode, I can almost guarantee that this episode will uncover new pearls of wisdom that you might have forgotten about. That's why today we are releasing a conversation with Olympic and world champion pole vaulter Katie Moot. To clear up any confusion, since recording this episode a few years ago, Katie has gotten married and changed her name from Najot to Moon. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Female Athlete Nutrition Podcast. I have a guest with me today, Katie Najot. She's the Tokyo Olympic 2020 champion in the women's pole vault. So excited to talk to her, not only about her recent gold medal, but so many other things about sport, nutrition, body image. So a little bit about Katie. She grew up in Olmsted Falls, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland. She was a Division I state champion in 2009 and a Division II national champion in 2013 at Ashland University. Two-time U.S. champion, and she has the fourth highest jump in the history of the sport of pole vault ever in the history. I just think that's we have to hit home on that one. 4.95 meters, which is about 16 feet, 2 inches, just flying, soaring in the air. Katie, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, we're just thrilled to have a gold medalist on this show. Not to negate all of your amazing performances prior to these past Olympics. You've been definitely the top in your sport for a couple of years now, but we can just reflect back on Tokyo. What was that experience like for you? That was your first ever Olympics, never mind a gold medal, right?
Yeah. So I don't have much to compare it to, but I will say, you know, everybody has been asking what was it like with COVID and how different was it? I mean, I don't have anything to compare it to, but it still felt really special. It still felt like you were around the best of the best athletes. And I mean, we were wearing masks everywhere, of course, but it still felt like a really cool environment and there was a really good energy. So,
yeah. It still felt like the Olympics for, you know, the hype that we think about having the best athletes on the same stage together and everything.
Yes, there was definitely still the nerves and the excitement and all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I actually recently listened to Lindsay Hines, I'll Have Another podcast that you were on. I think it was released early September. And I listened to that. I'm a huge fan of her podcast and she's had me on as a guest too. And I don't feel like we need to like do a repeat of that because it was a really good episode. So I want to give her a shout out. But I love how in detail you went on, like, you know, with the other Lindsay, you went into detail about just the, you know, every jump by jump and the technique that you've kind of worked on with your pole vaulting skill. So I highly recommend listening to that. But, you know, as I was listening to it, Katie, I picked up on this little thing that you said. You didn't talk about it. So I'm going to ask you, you mentioned you had food poisoning right before. Is that true?
Yes, I don't know what it was from. I went to a competition in Monaco. This was, you know, a couple weeks before I was leaving for Tokyo. And I did well at the, I won the meet, but I was definitely flat and I just thought it was jet lag. But then in the next couple of days, I started to just feel kind of head cold sick. I mean, I kept getting COVID tests. It wasn't COVID, but I just, especially, so we flew back to Paris after the meet, spent one day there, and I started to really not feel great there, and then flew home the next day, and I really did not feel well on the flights back. But again, I thought it was more just head cold. It wasn't stomach. It was just feverish, that type of feeling. And when I got home, I went to bed and then woke up and just, yeah, it was clearly something I ate that my body was just trying to get out, however it could. And that lasted about 3 days and ended up putting me in the emergency room because I just wasn't able to keep anything in me.
Oh my goodness.
And they put me on antibiotics, among other things, and I had a bad reaction to the antibiotics where I just got hives all over my body. So it was a rough, week, and I just felt like in the grand scheme of my year, it was like, of course, what else could go wrong? At this point, we've had COVID, we've had polls break, we've had, you know, what else can happen? So it was frustrating, but, you know, it obviously all worked out as it needed to, but it did add a level of stress because I was now lighter body weight wise than I would want to be. I mean, you want to be lean in the pole vault, of course, but you also want to have a certain amount of mass on you coming down the runway. So,
yeah, and moving and pushing that pole and having it bend, you know, how you want it to and everything, even a pound could make a difference in, yeah. And I'm just thinking energy levels. I mean, so this was just a couple weeks before the Olympics. Did you let that, I imagine you didn't, but did you let that get in your head at all of like, am I strong enough? Or do I have enough stamina?
I mean, I was of course nervous because the Olympics is the biggest meet of my life, but I will say I didn't really let it affect me much while we were there. With pole vault poles, they vary in length and in stiffness. So I have softer poles and I was on softer poles. So I'm sure that played a factor, but I tried not to let it get the best of me. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, just what a year in general. And then it's like, oh, of course I'll end up in the hospital with food poisoning before trying to compete
at this point.
Oh my goodness. Well, you obviously rebounded, which I think, you know, we'll get into your nutrition soon. But one thing I always say when it comes to like, you know, your foundation of nutrition, you know, we're all going to get sick, we're all going to get injured at some point. But you know, pending how strong your foundation is can really dictate your resiliency and how quickly you bounce back from something. So I would, you know, imagine, we haven't gotten into it yet, but I would imagine you had a good solid nutritional base so that when you did get sick, it didn't wipe you out completely and you're able to bounce back pretty fast.
Yeah, I'd like to think so anyways.
Yeah. And well, let's chat a bit more about pole vaulting. You know, I dabbled in the pole vault a little bit myself in college. No, nowhere near your heights.
It's okay.
But, you know, it is just such a unique sport. And especially considering at a young age, like at the high school level, not many athletes have exposure to it. Some high schools have it. Some club track teams do, but some don't. Even my high school did it. But like, it was pretty sketchy. Nobody knew what they were doing. So I'm curious to know your background and how you got into it in the first place.
Yeah, I saw the high schoolers doing it when I was in seventh grade. It was the first day they took the middle schoolers out to the track for track practice. And I was a gymnast when I was younger. So I loved anything with upper body strength and adrenaline and
flying through the air.
Yes, daredevilish activities. So I knew I needed to try it. And I begged my coaches for days and they finally let me go over because again, I think, you know, it was not something they were super familiar with. So then having an athlete try it is just an added thing that they have to worry about. So, but I just, I wouldn't let it go, and they did let me go over. And so I loved it from day one.
Yeah. Did you pick it up quickly coming from gymnastics? Were you pretty good at it right away?
Yeah, I would say so. I had a very like natural steady progression where I wasn't just like a phenom out of nowhere, but I did well at every level. And yeah, but I will say I had to kind of work to be the best at each level for a couple years before, you know, winning the state meet and then winning nationals. It was like that was senior year and then senior year again. And then 5 years out of college is when I made the U.S. national team for the first time and won, or I'm sorry, made the world team for the U.S. and won U.S. nationals. So I definitely picked it up quickly and I was good. And I think coaches saw potential, but I definitely had to kind of work my way up at each level to be the best, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what was the decision-making process behind going to Ashland University with it being a Division II school? I always like to highlight this, that like D1 isn't everything and you can find success at D2 and D3 schools. What was kind of your decision-making process in that? Was athletics a focus?
So I actually went to the University of Dayton for 2 years first and really struggled there. That is a D1 school because I was also very caught up in the D1 and I got a good feeling about it. So I went there, but I actually really struggled there and had a pretty bad mental block. And so at my junior year, I ended up transferring to Ashland and that's where I had huge success. And especially in an individual sport, especially in track and field and pole vaulting, you can have success at any level because it's just you and the runway and the bar, and it's just you versus the bar every jump, and that's the same at any level. So yeah, I'd like to think that I helped show that you can be successful at any division that you go to.
Yeah, absolutely. Now you mentioned that while at the University of Dayton, you had a big mental block. You mean like with your jumps specifically?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh gosh, that can just completely freeze you as a pole vaulter.
Yes, because there is a, you know, what we do, there is a fear element to it. And you can either let it, you know, make you crumble or you can thrive with it. But for me, there was a lot of change all at once that I just wasn't ready for. New coach, new everything, being away from home for the first time, all of it just got the better of me. And I lost any confidence in my ability. And my entire career, I just didn't really know what I was doing. I just ran down and threw my hands up and hoped for the best. I just went purely off of adrenaline. And so I didn't know where to focus to get me off the ground because I was just running through all the time. There was just, I wasn't even jumping off the ground, bending the pole. It was just run into the pit. You don't even give yourself a chance. So, but when you're afraid of it and that overcomes you, you just, there's no getting over it. It's very hard to get out of that. So that's a big reason why I transferred, is because I needed a new environment and a new situation to get out of this bad mental block.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, this is kind of a joke that I'm comparing, but I'm just reflecting on my own experiences with the pole vault. It's a joke because I was like a 9, 10 foot jumper. So yeah, I did like 10-8 or something like that. 10,
that's
yeah.
Not bad.
So, but what I'm reflecting on is that fear concept, though. You really, you can't get in the air with fear and not you're at 16 feet in the air, 15, 16 feet in the air. You have to give it 100%. So if there's even just 1% doubt in your mind, you can't get off the ground because that it is very, very dangerous. And so what are some ways that you've, you know, overcome that throughout the years? And how do you address this? How do you give every single jump 100%? It sounds silly because as a high level athlete, you would think no matter what your sport, you're giving everything 100%. But like, no offense, basketball players, but if you did give 98% on a shot, like you'll miss and that's not good, but you're not going to hurt yourself.
Right, right. Well, it started with just, I think, a new environment and kind of a new source of motivation. And we went back to really short approach, really small pulls, and just slowly but surely built that confidence. In D2, there's not as much pressure, I guess, of like, okay, now do it now. Okay, now we back up. Now we get raise our grip. Now we, you know, and I needed a very slow but steady pace to allow me to get comfortable repping things out 10 more times than maybe we would at D1, because I remember at Dayton, you know, I'd do something, I'd finally like kind of find it, and we'd do two jumps and he'd be like, okay, move up a grip or move back. And it was like, I would go back into that like afraid state, even though it was irrational. It just, you know, it was very real. And so at Ashland, that coach allowed me to just rep it out over and over and over again as needed to really just build confidence to where I wanted to jump high more than I was afraid of it. So for a while, it was just using adrenaline to combat it and overcome it. And it wasn't the perfect fix, but it worked at the time. And then when I got to start working with Brad Walker, my now coach, he's the one that really changed the mental side. And he just taught me how to think on the runway and how to focus on the runway. And so as I'm coming down, I have specific cues that I'm trying to execute. So as I'm coming down, I'm just thinking, okay, punch the hand on one. And so by channeling it into a specific action that I'm trying to do, it keeps the fear out of it and the abstract of, okay, take it off the ground, because that's a very abstract. That's not a specific action of, okay, you know, really drive the takeoff, like get the takeoff step down as quickly as you can. By thinking about it as a specific action, it makes it a lot easier to overcome the emotional things.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, AKA the Fast Track to Overcome Disordered Eating and Use Food as Fuel to Perform at Your Highest Level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the Fast Track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you can apply that concept to a lot of things in life too, is like one step at a time. What is your next action step? Instead of thinking about the whole big picture that can seem so scary and overwhelming, what is the next thing to take action on and focus on, and really breaking it down piece by piece? And you also dropped a really good little quote in there. I don't even know if you realized it, but you said when you finally want it more than you fear it, then when you take it to the next step, right?
Yeah,
that's a great thing. And allowing yourself to build up your confidence until you want it more than you fear it, which is awesome. Yeah. Well, that's great. And then, you know, so at totally fast forwarding again now, you know, at Tokyo, your opening jumps didn't necessarily go as hoped for.
No. Misses, and I don't normally miss at the opening height just because Brad and I have gotten it so dialed in to, like, we've eliminated a lot of variables, and my warm-up jumps tell me exactly what pull I need to be on. And I just, during my warm-ups, my takeoff leg, my quad was just so tight, it wouldn't loosen up. And so I spent a lot of trips down the runway just trying to loosen it up. So I really didn't get any good warm-up jumps in. So I think that was kind of a continuation of the warm-up, because it did end up loosening up, but you know, I think I was hesitant in those first couple jumps, really jumping off of it aggressively. So I do think that played a factor. And of course, it was very stressful. But
imagine.
You'll see me, if you watch the meet, you see me kind of talk to myself on the runway, but all I'm saying is my cues. All I'm saying is, okay, jump on one, jump like you've never freaking jumped before. Like, you know, pull tip up, relax, jump on one. Like, I'm just repeating my cues over and over so that when I start moving, there's not really a conscious thought process, but it's so fresh in my mind that it's like I'm telling my body to do what I want it to do.
Mm-hmm. I love that too, just the power of repetition of your, you know, kind of mantras in your head, because just like you said, it's then when you're actually doing it, it's like in your subconscious, you know?
Yeah.
Your body just follows once you've convinced your mind of what you need to do. So you did that as kind of a continuation of your warm up in some sense, repeated all your cues to yourself. And on that third jump at opening height, cleared it, which of course, then you continued to progress for the rest of the meet.
Yeah. It wasn't perfect right away. I definitely had to make a couple adjustments, and part of it might have also, I was coming down on the bar, which again, I don't normally do. And maybe a part of that was from the food poisoning and that I was lighter. I was on softer pulls than normal, like quite a bit. There was something that was, you know, my pulls weren't rolling like normal. And so, you know, after my miss at the next height, 470, I just said, okay, we need to move my starting point closer on the runway, which is not something we would train to do. It's not, you know, what is textbook, so to say, but I just realized that in that moment, I almost needed to run into the pole to make it move. I mean, your hands are at a fixed point. So if you're too close, it can throw off your posture and the energy flow. Ideally, you want to be standing straight up and down with your arms straight over your head. If you're just like standing still, that would be what it looked like. And then as you jump through, it gives you space to jump through aggressively. If you're too close, you can't jump as aggressively. But I just realized I needed to run into the pole to make it move that day. So that's the adjustment that I made. And then after that, it seemed to go pretty smoothly.
Yeah. So you've mentioned a few times, you know, when we were talking about the unfortunate food poisoning, maybe making you a bit lighter, and just this, you know, relationship between your weight and the pole you're using and how you make it move effectively. Is this something that you try to manage, or is it something that you more adjust, you know, with being flexible with, just as you said, switching poles or adjusting your steps? Like, you know, how do you, as in a sport that weight plays a role, you're defying gravity in so many ways, you know, how do you approach your own body weight?
Yeah, I just try to be conscious of how I'm eating. My coach has more of an idea of what he would like me to be at, but it's not like you have to be at this weight. It's just, you're looking a little lean. Let's maybe, like, you know, give you a little bit more, like maybe up your calories, your fat intake, whatever. And it's not anything I micromanage. I used to be way too strict with my diet because I looked at all these phenomenal athletes and thought they were, you know, probably borderline starving themselves to look that way, which is a very flawed logic. But I always said I didn't want my diet to be the reason I didn't succeed. So I just took it to the extreme. So now it's just, with all the work that we put in, I don't limit myself. And I eat just good quality meals several times a day, and I space them out, you know, probably 2 to 3 hours. I will eat an hour and a half before workout, but I just want to make sure that I'm getting a good amount of food. And so, no, I don't eat to be a certain weight. It's more of just eating to fuel myself so that I have energy through the workouts. And I mean, with, again, the work that we put in, I don't obsess about how I look as much anymore, because I think that the body leaning out is a byproduct of the work that I'm putting in, but also by eating. And so, yeah, it's a fine line in pole vault, because obviously the weight, there's a weight ranking on each of the poles, but usually those are a lot bigger than what we are. So I weigh, I don't know, anywhere like around anywhere from 135 to 140, just depending on the time of year. And my poles can get up to 170, 180. So yeah, it's definitely tricky. And I know a lot of people do deal with some of the body image issues because of that in our sport for a lot of reasons. But I feel like I've gotten to a point where I've gotten a really good relationship with food, and I don't micromanage it. I eat when I'm hungry, I eat until I'm full, and just because I know my body needs it. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful to hear. And I think great advice, especially for any younger listeners. And I really appreciate that you said, you know, when you're fueling right to keep up the energy, to train hard, then your body becomes really a byproduct of that. Yes. And that really is what, yeah.
Before, where I thought if I could eat to look a certain way that the results would come. And it's a very like flawed logic.
Right. It's literally flipped.
Yes. Could not be the opposite.
Yeah. So I want to backtrack to, just for people who might not be super familiar with pole vault, when you say, like, you know, you weigh, you know, 140 and your pole does 170. So what that means, just for clarification, is that your pole could handle up to 170 pounds, like of carrying that load, sort of, right? So if you're using a larger pole, you've got to have quite a bit of strength to move that then.
Yes. Yeah. And typically most vaulters are on poles that are anywhere from, like, at this level, are anywhere from 20 to, yeah, sometimes 40 pounds over their weight, just depending. And so, yeah, the stronger you are, the more energy you can put into the pole and the stiffer poles that you can get on.
Mm-hmm. And now when you say that at that level, you're usually on larger poles, is that just because of the height of them and just the, I'm just trying to understand, because I'm thinking, again, this is my high schooler pole vault mind that was like, yeah, oh, no. Like if we went on a smaller pole, we could bend it more.
No, yeah, I just don't want a high schooler to hear this and think they have to be on like 30 pounds over their weight kind of thing. But I just, you work your way up. So the pole will tell you what you need. And so, yes, you can bend it more if it's softer, but you're going to land in the back of the pit. You're not going to be able to clear anything on it. And so that's kind of your gauge of, okay, now go up a little bit stiffer. So you, because your hips have to be peaking in this small window to clear a bar. It's basically at the elite level, you can put the standards anywhere, but it's, you know, a 50 centimeter, you know, window where your hips can peak. So if you're on a softer pole, that's fine, but you're probably not going to clear anything. So that's how you kind of know when to go up, is how the way that you hit the bar and just how the pole bends and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you know, engaging in this conversation. I honestly, most of the time on this podcast, like, avoid talking weight and numbers completely because there's so many issues surrounding it. But I also really appreciate that we can talk about this in this sport where it's like, you're using a pole that has a weight, you know, classification on it. It's part of the sport. So it's something that needs to be addressed.
And when I was in high school, we had to tell them what we weighed, and we couldn't use a pole that was lower than that weight ranking. Now they weigh them. And I think that is the most messed up logic and decision that you could ever, ever do. I hope whoever needs to hear this that made that decision realizes how messed up that is, because I weighed like 135, 140 in high school, but my practice pole was a 130 pole. It was just, I wasn't going to break it. I just wanted something soft to just get me in. And at the time, you're not, it can be just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, to make somebody get on a pole that's too stiff for them. And it just, it's, and then now you're making girls get on a scale in front of people. Like that is
terrible.
You're just creating issues and body image issues. And I think it's horrible. I really, yeah, I could go on all day about that. I think it's terrible. But
I could as well, because like I mentioned, I attempted pole vault in high school and also had that experience of being weighed. And it's actually part of my story, Katie, and how nutrition and this passion came to be for me. My senior year, I had a surgery and was, you know, out. I was on the couch for a month and my body was recovering. My body composition changed a little bit, but then I was eager because it was my senior year. I was eager to get back into competition as quickly as possible, but I had gained some weight and I felt this pressure to get on back to a lower weight to because of weigh-ins, because I had two meets left of my season and we had weigh-ins for pole vault. So it was toxic. It was not good. I won't share the terrible habits I engaged in at that time.
I'm sure I've done similar. So
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I hope anybody listening making high school rules, there's other ways that you can protect the safety of high school pole vaulters without making a female athlete get on the scale.
Right. And it's not the box collar, which is this new thing. I won't even get into that, but it's this new pad that goes over the box that supposedly like protects them if they fall in, but it makes the box smaller. So it's just,
and it affects your, yeah. So that's not helpful either. Okay, lots of changes need to be made.
Lots of changes we get into now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, as we're talking more about your nutrition and this approach that you have now, which is wonderful, and you've kind of reflected, maybe it wasn't always this way. So at what point in your life, you know, did nutrition come on your radar as being something important to your athletics?
Yeah, I will say I really started. So when I was younger, I could just eat anything and everything and stay small. And I realized I got attention from that and just would go crazy with it. And I would say my body started to change and my metabolism started to slow down my sophomore, junior year of college, really. I would say college, but I was still being like active, obviously, with sports, but I really noticed a difference. I would say my junior year, because I created like this major appetite where I wasn't satisfied unless I was bursting at the seams every meal, because that was what was habit for me. And so then I would say my senior year is when it really, that was the first time I went to my coach and I just realized anything that doesn't help me hurts me in the sport. And he gave me just a very generalized, like, nutrition plan. He wasn't necessarily qualified, but it was just good stuff where it's like, you know, eat, you know, I don't know, eggs or yogurt or fruit, always eat breakfast, and then just, you know, get protein and carbs each meal. Like, it was very basic and it worked. It helped. And I did lean out, and I wasn't until I went on like the pro circuit that I just saw all these women in sports bras looking fabulous. And I was always self-conscious about my abs because the way my body puts on weight is my midsection is the first place that gets wide. I think I put on weight more like a guy does. I don't get anything in my hips or in my butt or my legs. It's all in my midsection. And my torso is really short. So if I'm not like at my leanest, most peak competition season, I'm self-conscious about that because sports bras and spandex shorts cut you off very short, and I'm already short there to begin with. So, and I just, you always want what you don't have. So I saw these women with these long, lean torsos, and that's what social media is telling us is beautiful. And I didn't have that. So you always, I mean, grass is always greener, but so I just started to go way too strict. I met with a nutritionist in Knoxville, Tennessee. Ironically enough, my sister is now a dietitian. So,
oh, wonderful.
A resource. But I met with a dietitian at the time. She's younger than me, so she was still in school. And she gave me a good nutrition plan. You know, it was eat like 5 to 6 meals a day every 2 to 3 hours. These are like good proteins. These are good carbs. These are healthy fats. These are fruits and veggies. And then just make sure you're, you know, like it was just kind of a guide. And I just took that to the extreme because I remember I saw myself in a sports bra. I got sick in the winter of 2014. I got the flu that at that time was like killing people. Like it was a really aggressive form of the flu. And so I got really, really sick. It put me out. So I lost some muscle mass and I came back, but I was determined to compete in a sports bra. I didn't the season before because I was a little self-conscious about it, but I was determined I was going to fit in with everybody and wear like a crop top or a sports bra when I competed. And I got pictures back after one of the competitions and I was just mortified at how I looked. And didn't look bad, but I definitely looked softer because I you know, was sick for weeks. And so that's where it just, I went crazy with it and, you know, was obsessed with food and how I would limit my calories. And I would eat basically like a Quest bar, protein bar, and an apple, like 4 out of 6 meals a day.
Oh, no.
Part of it too is that I was living, I had a roommate situation that wasn't great for me and I didn't feel super welcome there. So I would avoid coming out of my room and I had protein bars in my room. So I wouldn't even want to come out to cook. So I would just eat the protein bars. And so just very undernourished. And I could feel that in fall. I would, you know, get, you know, just a couple jumps and then be just totally gassed. So I would come in kind of high at a competition and then immediately pass to a personal best. And that was just, that was the reality for, you know, year, I would say. And then I don't know what changed for me. There was not this big drastic moment that came over me. It's just, I slowly but surely started to just be a little more lenient and just not care as much. I did move back home. I had been in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so I moved back home. And then I think just being more comfortable there, I just started to relax a little bit more with it. And yeah, so it's definitely been a journey with it. And now, like I said, I still use that general guide that he gave me, but I've definitely found really like healthy way to do it. And I use my sister as, you know, somebody at advice. She works mostly, she works with cystic fibrosis.
Oh, wow.
So she doesn't work with athletes, but she obviously has great general knowledge. And then I worked this year with the USATF dietitian and she just backed up what I was saying and what my meal plan. But also then we got testing done on me and realized that my iron was extremely low. So incorporated iron into my diet. And I think that's made a huge difference this year. So
fans, I hope you are enjoying the conversation. We are going to take a quick pause so I can tell you about our partners. They are so valuable in providing you with amazing products and helping keep this podcast going. First, Prevenix. Thanks to their incredible Joint Health Plus product, my aches and pains from running and honestly being a new mom, as crazy as that sounds, have literally disappeared. As I continue to push my body physically as an athlete and frankly, as I continue to age, I was shocked at the aches I was beginning to feel in my knees, wrists, ankles. It seemed like omega-3s, curcumin, nothing was really working. But after just 1 month of Joint Health Plus from Prevenix, I felt a drastic improvement. Honestly, this is something I rarely experience with supplements, but Prevenix uses quality ingredients backed by sound science. Their products are pharmaceutical grade with extensive testing for safety, quality, and purity. They offer other supplements, including probiotics, omega, immune health, and a multivitamin, which I also use daily. And the science behind their multi has changed my opinion on multivitamins altogether. I used to never recommend them or take them myself, and now I recommend and take Prevnix Multivitamin Mineral and Antioxidant Plus daily. I am so impressed with Prevnix, and I can't wait for you to try. You can get 15% off your first order using the code RISEUP at checkout. The company also offers 100% money-back guarantee within 30 days because they stand by their products. and so do I. Head to Prevnex.com, P-R-E-V-I-N-E-X.com, and use the code RISEUP, one word, at checkout for 15% off. For nutritional shakes and bars to fuel your body, head to Orgain.com and use the code RISEUP30 for 30% off your first order. Orgain's ready-to-drink nutritional shakes are my go-to to throw in my bag when I'm heading to the gym or to a trail to run, so that when I'm done, I've got a recovery option to refuel and rehydrate with right away. Orgain makes nutrition and sports nutrition that works. For repeat customers, check the show notes for more. And again, first-time customers, head to Orgain.com and use the code RISEUP30, all caps. And last, ladies, moms, every mom is an athlete. That's why Jen and Carrie have designed the best nursing and pumping sports bras. I cannot rave about these enough. I hate that most maternity bras have clips and don't support being active, but Jen and Carrie get that because they're moms and athletes themselves. They want you to be a mom and an athlete. So their stylish and athletic high-impact bras allow you to crush your workout and then feed your baby with comfort and style. They have saved me during this time of my life, keeping up with sport and momming. Please go check them out at jenandcarrie.com and use the code RISEUP10 for $10 off your order. You won't regret it. Again, jenandcarrie.com, RISEUP, all caps, RISEUP10 for $10 off. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. You know, so what you're saying is going to become one of my next Instagram quotes. Protein bars do not equal a meal.
No, they do not.
Protein bar is not a meal.
As like a protein bar and an apple is like, that's like, you know, meal number 4 out of 6, like, but not 4 of them out of 6. Like,
yeah. But I also really respect too that environment plays a huge role in this. And I think, you know, I've definitely seen this as a dietitian over the last basically 2 years now, with definitely the onset of COVID for sure, but just the continuation of life stressors or people moving back home or being around family more, just being maybe in an environment that isn't the best for them mentally, emotionally, and that plays a role in your nutrition as well. So, you know, it sounds like there were kind of a couple things going on in your life at that time, the body image concern, the pressure of, oh, I'm at this elite level now, you know, maybe I need to look a certain way, combined with an environment that made you isolated with food. Eating in isolation is never really a healthy habit. So that all those things kind of combined.
Yes.
That, you know, definitely became a problem.
And it's nice because now I work with a coach that's very much like the opposite. And my coach in Knoxville was great. He wasn't fueling any of this. Like, he was trying to, he could tell I was stressed about it. And if anything, was trying to like not add to the stress. He's like, you look great. Like, what do you, you're fine. Like, but my coach now is big on like gaining muscle and gaining mass. And if anything, eating more, like making sure that I am eating a lot rather than not enough. And it's very refreshing to be around somebody that's just like, who cares what you look like? And I know that's easier said than done, especially for a guy, but it's just a very refreshing mentality to be around of like, no, it's okay to gain weight as long as it's the right way. And with the work that we're doing, it is the right way. Like, but it's refreshing for them to want me to gain weight. And then, you know, I remember during preseason last year, he's like, okay, you're looking a little lean. So maybe like go visit your boyfriend and just I will never say this again, but eat whatever you want this weekend to just like give yourself some something and then come back. You know, it's just having a coach that
supports that.
Yeah, supports eating and eating a lot but good quality. Like as long as it's good quality food and not like chips and like, you know, processed stuff, like it's fine. So it is nice having that person to make it okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And Yeah, I think your environment, and this is, you know, one of my goals of this podcast is to, you know, spread this message and change the conversation, change the way that we talk about food to just make it a more positive experience. Because having a coach who's talking about it more positively and saying, you know, it's okay to gain weight or like go enjoy your weekend, eat what you want, you know, while still respecting the sport. And did you fuel before practice? Make sure you get good quality nutrients to recover. You know, it's, you know, those are the messages we need to be spreading more often. So it's wonderful that you're there now. And
yeah, I've heard and seen coaches that have made their athletes, you know, weigh in and want them to be lighter and leaner. And then I've seen a situation where every single one of those athletes was injured when they needed to, like at later in the season, they were all super lean early in the year. And then later in the year, they were injured. And it's just I mean, being too lean can be detrimental to your career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It absolutely can. And I'm curious to know more about how you mentioned the scenario or the experience at one time of feeling like, okay, I want to compete in my sports bra because this is what everyone else is doing, but then still struggling with the aftermath of that, of not liking how you looked in those pictures. And, you know, a lot of sports, female sports, even male sports are revealing with the uniforms. Pole vault's certainly one of them. You know, we've got little, I don't even know what you call them, but, you know, underwear uniforms on.
Yeah, like buns and crop top. And I think it's really like Holly Bradshaw's a pole vaulter that she competes in a onesie. She just did she just wrote a really nice thing about it. Like she was getting these, you know, if she's from Great Britain. And so the media there can be a little tough. They can be extremely supportive, but they can also be tough. And I think she typed her name in and Holly Bleasdale Fat popped up next to it.
Terrible.
And she wasn't, like, it's just ridiculous. But like, you know, of course you're young and you see that and that's just going to just ruin your self-confidence. And so that she competes in the onesie now and always has, because she's like, I'm not going to let my body like and worry about what I look like affect me while I'm doing my job and what I'm trying to do.
Well, and I, you know, that's tough because as much as I want to say, you know, no, wear whatever, show your abs, you know, do it. Who cares what the critics say? It's also important for somebody to focus on what's really important. And so if that means I'll wear a onesie so that I can focus on my sport and not be distracted, then do what you got to do, you know?
Exactly. It's like, Holly, you can wear whatever you want, but and like, if this is what makes you feel good and powerful and get the job done, power to you. Like, yeah, it's just, people can be mean, and we're in a sport where a lot of eyes are on us. You get pictures taken, you from every angle, like, and so it just, yeah, I have an infinitely better relationship with food and my body image than I ever did. And granted, I do think it's, you know, it's easy to say that being in the best shape of my life, but also that came from working hard and wanting to jump as high as possible, not because I was trying to look that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know if you feel this way, but allowing your body to morph and change, like you said, maybe right now you're in the best shape of your life, but you know, there were time periods where you weren't, and allowing your body to morph and change and kind of having all these different, like almost like a Rolodex of like, okay, I was still me at this time. I was still me at this time and I'm still me now. So that if your body morphs and changes again and looks, you know, like, I don't, you know, how it did however many years ago, you'll know how to overcome that and handle that and how to love yourself better, you know? So that, you know, that's one way that I kind of view improving your body image during all these different phases is allowing yourself to just be in the moment with, okay, this is my body where it's at right now. And it might change again in the future. And I don't need to force it into change, but just being accepting. And then, you know, it's easier as you age. This is why I think some younger girls struggle more. But, you know, if you keep yourself in this box of I can only look one certain way and you never change, then you don't have that like history of different versions of yourself to rely on, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think you have to find like important to you. And for me, jumping as high as possible is what's important to me. So at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter what I look like as long as I'm doing what I need to do. And so right now I'm actually like, my coach kind of encourages like getting a little bit softer in the off season, because when we come back, the workload's pretty tough and you want a little bit of cushion on you, so to say. Like, he, you know, and so it's, even now it's tough, like watching my body go through the changes, and it's not, you know, super drastic, but it like, when you see yourself in the best shape of your life, it can be difficult to then see your body change. But I just have to say, I don't care like anymore. You know,
what you care about is jumping your best. And
yes. Mm-hmm. I know how to be healthy, and healthy is going to look different on everybody. I mean, you look at every athlete that was in the Olympics and you line us all back to back, and there are just drastically different body types. And that's like, they're all healthy. And so it's just at the end of the day, as long as you're healthy, it's like, that's all that matters.
Yep. Yep. And again, I think your coach, shout out to him, of helping you with that. Hey, it's the off season. This is okay. This is expected, because if you as an athlete are really taking to his advice, which you are, of course, and following through with that training plan, your goal is to jump your highest. So listening to your coach on that is super important too.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, go out and like eat whatever crap you want. It's more of just like, don't stress about it. Like, go out and eat. Like, if you're eating a big plate of like pasta, like, that's fine. Like, it's more of like, he doesn't want me eating like, I put M&Ms in peanut butter. I love that as like just a little like dessert snack. And he's like, maybe don't do a ton of that, or maybe don't do a ton of cheesy tots, or like things like that. But if it's like good quality food, and like, then yeah, like, you just don't stress yourself out and, you know, eliminate things. Like, I can't think of the word that I want to use.
Yeah, eliminate, restrict.
Yeah, restrict yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. With that being said, did you have any sort of celebratory meal after winning gold?
Well, so I went back to the village, and, you know, it's they had a ton of options, but obviously it's, first of all, it's 1 a.m. Oh, and second of all, it was, you know, just, it wasn't anything like, you couldn't go out to dinner and really celebrate. So I think I had on my plate at one point pizza, sushi, and breakfast food, like all, everything looked good. I wanted to grab all of it. And yeah, that was, but I was like by myself, just in the cafeteria, just eating my meal at 1 a.m. after winning.
Yeah. just re-nourishing your body.
Yeah. For me, I love Asian food. And so sushi, I love Thai food, Indian food, hibachi. I mean, you name it, I love it. So that's typically when I eat that, like, when I crave things, that's what I crave. If I order out, that's what I get. And I like it because for the most part, it's really like not terrible for you. I never feel like it's like, you know, bad. Like, and again, nothing's really like that bad. You can have anything in moderation.
Yeah. But it makes you feel good when you eat that style food, the rice and the fish, and that makes you feel good.
Yeah. I'll get the grilled chicken or shrimp or, you know, whatever. And so it just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads us to, as we close out this podcast, I usually have a few quick questions that I ask every guest. And I wonder if what you're saying will answer our very first question. So, Katie, if you could eat one food every single day for the rest of your life, but never get sick of it, what would that be?
Probably sushi.
Yeah. Awesome. And did you really get to experience it when you were in Tokyo, or no, because of COVID restrictions?
No, not really. They did have sushi in the village, but it was more just like cooked tuna, cooked shrimp, vegetables. They kept it really basic. I don't wanted anyone to get food poisoning. So
yeah. And you didn't want to go through that again either.
Ooh, oh my gosh. I would never have recovered.
Yeah. So you'll have to make another trip back to Japan at some point to get your favorite food and try that sushi. Yes, again.
Yeah. Definitely.
Awesome. Well, next question. It sometimes seems obvious, but it's also never is. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
It's funny because I did not go to pole vault right away. I loved it. I love to play golf. Yeah. So I mean, pole vault, I love it, but I think now because it's like more of my job, I like when I get away from it, it's definitely golf.
Golf, a bit more of a relaxing game.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, okay.
I would say until you're about two strokes in and then you're like, why did I choose to do this for the next 2 hours?
So. Too funny. How about as a spectator, Katie, what's your favorite sport to watch?
Football. I love football. Yeah, I love the Browns. I love Ohio State. Big Cleveland sports fan in general.
Yeah, that's where you're from, so it makes sense. Yeah.
Football is my favorite.
Awesome, Katie. And last question. If there is another female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to and just lift her up for being really inspirational in any regard, whether this is somebody in your personal life or somebody more well-known, who would that be and why?
That's a great question. I feel like the first person that came to mind was Sydney McLaughlin, because just she posted something recently just being really vulnerable, and I'm also Christian, and so just the way she's carried herself and handled herself and just that post where she was super vulnerable about what she's been going through, and you know, people have been just expecting a lot from her but also trying to tear her down, and she's just handled herself very, very classy. And I would say between her and Allison Felix, like, it's just they're very inspiring, and I appreciate just the way that they carry themselves, and just, yeah, the honesty that she put out there was really refreshing.
Yeah. Well, between Sydney McLaughlin, Allison Felix, and yourself, Katie Najat, you know, definitely female athletes to look up to in all regards, and all Olympians as well, and medalists.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing so much about just your journey, your story, and nutrition and body image. We really appreciate it and can't thank you enough.
No, thank you for having me. This was great.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out, and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide, or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.